Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session, and this time we are not going to say the name Donald something once. We're just going to do too much serious political shit, and I enjoy it, and I enjoy the conversations. But this whole show was started on the premise of two dudes drinking at a bar having fun talking. And there's sometimes just we talk about stupid shit. We've done and talked about really stupid shit. So we decided we're going to talk about something just to enjoy, relax about, and get away from politics for a bit. And we decided to go with five movies that are guilty pleasures of ours. Mm-hmm. Now, I define a guilty pleasure as a movie that if someone saw me watching, it would go, really? You're watching that? That's dumb. That's whatever. That's stupid. And I go, yeah, you know what? Kiss my ass. I like this movie, and I'm going to watch it again and again. And that's it. What is your definition?
I think we're along the same line, right? Okay. Like a movie that was not critically acclaimed or
got trashed.
That's not necessarily a cult favorite. Like, right. It's basically a movie that, you know, the self-proclaimed movie critics or actual movie critics would just be like, that's not a good movie. You know what I mean? Like just one of those movies or one of those movies where, for me, it's one of those movies where I turn it on, and if I'm flipping through the channels, I stop, I watch it every time.
Right.
But yet the room clears, and I'm the only one watching. I'm watching it by myself.
We are on the same page. All right, so I'm going to say you won the toss, and you can either take the first movie or defer.
I will defer to you.
You're going to defer to me. Okay. I'm going to start off with a movie that I absolutely fucking love. It's called Big Trouble in Little China, starring Kurt Russell and Kim Cattrall. It is goofy, cheesy, predictable. Well, not really. It's a weird fucking movie, which is it's in the 80s. So young Kurt Russell, young Kim Cattrall, and it's just plain dumb fun, and I love it. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Oddly enough, I will say Kim Cattrall got hotter as she got older.
I agree.
It's a movie that, like, it's not one of those movies I've memorized and I know every line and every scene.
Unfortunately, I do.
And it's one of the, like, I'm not hard movie critic guy, so I'm more than willing to give dumb, bad movies a chance. This is one where I'm just like, okay,
you think I should feel guilty for this one?
If that came on with me here, I'd be like, hey, I'm gonna go.
I know how to get rid of you, because I've got it on my DVR.
You have it on DVR?
I might. Okay. I have at points in my life. There's a scene in the movie where he wins against the bad guy by literally having his own knife thrown at him, catching it, throwing it back at the guy who threw it at him. And his line is, it's all in the reflexes. And he goes, you know what old Jack Burton always says at a time like this? Now he's saying this to the bad guy with his face full of lipstick because he was just kissing Kim Cattrall. And he goes, you know what Jack Burton always says at a time like this? And he goes, who? Jack Burton, me. And anyway, dumb movie, great cheesy action, people flying through the air, sword fights in the air. Just dumb, and I fucking love it. So there's my first one.
Fair. All right. So my first one. Now this movie doesn't come on a lot, but if it's on, I watch it. It gets me every time. It's Steel Magnolias.
That's guilty pleasure for a given reason.
Because you're
not their target audience.
I am not their target audience.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Very emotional movie.
It literally makes me like bawl like a child every time I see it. And the last time I saw it, I was high out of my mind, which was problematic. So
we talked about this actually.
Did we?
Yeah, with Mike Wood actually.
Oh shit, that's right. So it is actually a really good movie, and it's got this crazy cast, right?
Like
Julia Roberts, Daryl Hannah, Dolly Parton, and I'm a huge Dolly Parton fan.
Tom Skerritt, Olivia Dukakis.
I mean, it just like it's just about a small southern town and Sally Field and how all these women kind of interact together. Julia Roberts gets sick and then, you know, ultimately dies.
Yeah.
And then just kind of how they all deal with it. And I don't know why I just, and part of it is because I was born in Texas. I'm from the South. And there is that sort of down-home vibe that kind of reminded me a little bit of back home. And even where I grew up in Youngstown, like, all the women just kind of constantly... There are all these weird sort of dynamics when I was younger that I didn't really understand. And the women, whether it was, you know, my mom and my friend's moms, and then, you know, like, just, I was surrounded by all these kind of really strong female characters in real life, who all had different issues, right? I had friends who got divorced. I had, you know, friends who had all sorts of, you know, their moms had businesses. Others were housewives, and they were all different, and they all kind of just kind of worked together. And I guess that's the appeal. But this movie falls in the guilty pleasure because, again, I'm not the target audience. So, you know, with me, you know, Big Black Steve.
You're saying your race, age, and
gender,
gender demographic, all of the things do not match.
Like, this is a movie that, like, it came on HBO when we were in college, right? And my roommates were also not the target audience and also did not quite have the same affinity for this movie that I did. So there was quite a bit of ridicule when, you know, they all come in the door and I'm sitting on the futon watching Steel Magnolias crying like a child.
I gotta ask, is Fried Green Tomatoes also on your list?
No. Which is a knockoff of this movie, by the way.
It kind of, I was trying to be an asshole. Now, literally, this came up when we talked to Mike Wood about how weed makes you more empathetic. And you talked about how you were high as a kite and fucking bawling your eyes out watching Steel Magnolias.
Nonstop.
And now we know it's not the effect of weed because you
don't
know
what it is. It's not. Just because, I mean, like, if you watch that, I mean, it's hard not to watch that movie and not get
emotional. It is an emotional movie. And it's a good movie. But it's also a critically acclaimed movie. But it does meet the definition of guilty pleasure because I guarantee you, in the UMass locker room, you're not like, "Hey man, did you watch Steel Magnolias last night?
What'd you do last night?
I watched
nothing. I didn't do anything.
I went to the strip club version. No, we were all there. You were there. I went to the other strip club. There is no other strip club.
It's Amherst. There's only one.
I was watching Steel Magnolias. All right. My number two. This movie got destroyed by the critics. Phenomenal cast. Bonfire of the Vanities. Tom Hanks, Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, Kim Cattrall. How about that? Kim Cattrall in two movies in a row. And there's a bunch of other names in there and faces you recognize. Geraldo Rivera has a brief appearance. It's a movie based on a book by Thomas Wolfe, and people hated it.
I've never seen it.
I love it. It's all about, basically, Tom Hanks is a socialite in New York, and he's a complete, you know, arrogant, cheating on his hot wife. His wife is Kim Cattrall. He's, you know, on top of the world, and he ends up in a bizarre accident where he actually wasn't responsible, but the DA wants to come down on him because he's a rich white socialite, and most of the people they prosecute in he's, you know, he's on Park Avenue or whatever. Most people prosecuted in that district are lower income, so that, you know, they just throw the book at him, and there's a bunch of twists in it. And there's just sleazy politics on all sides.
Bruce, so is it drama? Is it dramatic
or is it a comedy? It's a dramedy. So basically, Bruce Willis is a complete drunk who's a journalist, and he desperately needs to save his career. So he creates a story that ends up leading to Tom Hanks getting prosecuted, and then there's a bunch of twists in it, and just it's shady, it's funny, it's like a loaded cast. And it has a great twist at the end, and
it sounds terrible.
Steve, this movie came out in probably, I'm going to guess, 87 or 88. Again, it was written by Thomas Wolfe, who was like one of the big writers at the time.
Still, my list came out in 89. I was 9 when the movie came out.
Okay.
It's wild.
And it, like I said, it got destroyed by the critics, and it is a movie I genuinely love. Great. So, there we go.
All right, so my number four is...
Okay, I was going with
or, right, whatever, well, whatever, whatever. My second is Friday After Next. Okay, so...
That's a great choice. Go ahead.
So, in this, you've got Cat Williams, you've got Terry Crews, John Witherspoon, Ice Cube, Mike Epps, like, your whole Friday cast.
Right.
And this movie, for me, is as much kind of nostalgia, again, going back to college, because movie came out, didn't get a lot of pub, and I can't even remember if Friday After Next was in the theaters. This one might, like, because I know...
I think it was.
I think it was, too, but I can't remember. But either way, we watched this movie, we watched this DVD, like, we probably, I think we had to buy a new one because we watched it so much. There's a scene where there's a house party and Cat Williams walks in and he does this thing when he walks through the door and he's got a cane, like he's got his pimp cane, and he slams it down to the middle floor, literally drops down like a stripper and pops up, and then walks in with these two girls on his side. And for something about the next 10 minutes in that movie, it is all hysterical between Terry Crews being this giant, gay, aggressive. Wait,
Terry Crews is gay in the movie?
Yeah. Yes. And he's trying to fuck Mike Epps, but he's been in prison, and it's like prison rules. Like there's a lot going on. And then John Witherspoon is John Witherspoon. And there's a lot of great quotes and lines. Like, so whenever you hear me saying top flight security, it's a direct reference to Friday After Next. Because, you know, like they were security, like Craig and Mike Epps' character, they were security guards for Top Flight Security. And, you know, Top Flight Security in the world, Craig, we the best security in the world. Anyway, that is my, if it's on, I will watch it. I also have it on DVD, and I've watched it on more than one occasion in the last year.
Here's why I respect that choice so much. Friday was a great movie. Mm-hmm. Friday After Next came into existence because Friday was a great comedy.
Yes.
Friday was a legendary comedy.
Yes.
Friday After Next was not. But it's nostalgic. I get
it. I think if you go back and you watch it, again, not holding it to the standard,
right?
Right. Like,
my next one is going to be something you can look down on me for.
And I would say, you know, that whole franchise, right? Friday, Next Friday, Friday After Next, like they all had their own, like, pieces that hilarious. Now, I think Friday, the first Friday was kind of funny from start to finish.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Chris Tucker was unbelievable.
that launched him, didn't it? I mean, that was...
It did. And then, technically, Def Comedy, Def Comedy
Jam. Yeah, Def Comedy Jam, okay. But
launched him.
As an actor.
That really is what got us, you know, that got us to Rush Hour and everything else. And then if you know the backstory between, like, how we got Friday with literally Ice Cube writing it on a fucking iMac.
Mac top,
after the NWA days. I mean, I think the stories are good and there's a racial component, right? Like, for black people, like, you know, entertainment, cinema, movies, like, they're... Our culture is different, right? We look at things different. And so seeing a movie that was, yeah, there's some drug references and they smoke weed or whatever, but it's fun. It's lighthearted. It's entertaining. Like, I mean,
his name is Smokey.
His name was Smokey in the first one. But I just, I don't know. But okay. Friday After Next is definitely an excellent
choice. Okay, any moral high ground that I could have come at you with would be blown up right now, because my number three is Beer Fest. I love that movie. It is possibly the dumbest movie I have ever seen, and I absolutely fucking love it.
And you know what? I'm not even mad at you, because you know I love that movie, too.
But, I mean, it is... I mean, there's a scene where a guy is... trying to make a frog ejaculate, and he's describing it in scientific terms. Right? And the guy next to him goes, "Where'd you learn that? In Toad Load Magazine?" And that is not the dumbest line in that movie by any means.
No, it's not. And then when he stops, and the frog's...
And Wave's like, dude,
you see the frog's like hand, hey, I guess, or whatever.
You're not finished here, bitch.
And then he smokes a cigarette afterwards.
It is... incredibly stupid.
Right, it's the same guys who brought the lizard.
That's a broken lizard.
Broken lizard who brought you Super Troopers and movies like that. I mean,
not highbrow stuff. Right. But this thing is like, there's a scene where like they're getting shot with beer kit out of a giant keg and already falling and tearing the tops off women at Oktoberfest. I mean, it's got stupid gratuitous nudity, drug use, just gross humor, gross jokes, a guy who ends up getting...
A ton of drinking. And there's a... You know,
and Cloris Leachman's in it, which is a good thing.
So there's a scene where they're trying to get back... They're trying to get to the actual beer fest, right?
Right.
And the guy's like, oh, well, I was really hammered when I did it. So they go out, they get hammered, and they end up like going through all this sort of shit, and they end up back at the thing. Well, the problem is, unfortunately, I can directly relate to that, right? And I'm sure you can too, where it's just like,
I did this when I was hammered.
Right, it's just like, I can't, like you're looking for your, I'm looking for my keys or whatever, and, you know, usually I'm at home by myself, and it's just like, all right, well, I was hammered when I did this, so you try to think like you did when you were drunk, you can't, so it's like, all right, well, let's have seven beers and a half a bottle of Bullet and see where this gets us. And it's like, bam, found my keys.
Two things about that.
But now I'm too drunk to drive.
Two things about that, though. Right, they're trying to get him drunk on beer, and he's like, they can't get him drunk because he's been training. He's like, and the one guy's like, I'm through fucking around, and hands him a generic Goldschlager. Oh. And that is like the ultimate, like, you're over the ledge.
Yes.
And the brilliance of this movie is they kill off one of the main characters, one of the heroes, yes, and then they replace him with his unknown twin brother whose name is the same, and they say, why don't you call me by the same name anyway? I mean, they throw in drama and then just reverse the drama right away. It's so dumb, and I fucking love it. So there's my number three.
So my number three is just another one that just doesn't fit, but Mean Girls.
You know what? Again, people, I've only seen bits of it, and it's a funny movie with incredible talent.
I don't know if I would go with incredible
Tina
talent.
Tina Fey, what's his name? Tracy Morgan was going in my head, and that's wrong. Who's the black guy?
Oh, okay.
The other SNL guy.
Yes. I want to say Jay Farrow.
No.
But that's
not. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to derail you.
And, you know, Lindsay Lohan, whatever. Movie is, for whatever reason, stops me in my tracks, dead funny, laugh at every line the entire time. By the way,
you just named my ex-girlfriend's favorite movie. And well, that should knock you down a peg.
But so the problem with it is, like, it's clearly making fun of, you know, white girls in suburbia, right? But the problem is that there's a lot of truth said in jest. And so a lot, like, you see these scenarios and you go to any of the suburban schools or St. Joe's up the street and
on Wednesdays, we wear pink.
Right. I mean, this shit just fucking plays out. It's hilarious. But Mean Girls is one of those guilty pleasures where I am usually watching it alone and laughing hysterically at it.
And you are definitely not the target demographic.
They did not make that movie for me.
No, they did not. But what I've seen of it's funny. I wish I could come up with a name, but I'm not going to bother looking it up. All right. My number four, and this is a bit of a cheat, but it's kind of on the same premise as your Friday After Next. I loved the first Scream movie, and I think the first Scream movie was great. They then made, I don't even know how many others, at least four, or at least three others, I think maybe four others, and they are all garbage. After the first one, they are just plain garbage.
But Scream?
Scream.
Like
Nev Campbell. Yes. The first one's a great, like, partially...
Fair.
Partially funny, but pretty scary and well done, and I think it was a Wes Craven movie. And then basically they were like, and it had a pretty impressive cast too, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, Rose McGowan, you know, Skeet Ulrich.
Skeet Ulrich.
Henry Winkler. Let's not leave out Henry Winkler.
True.
Robert Englund, who played, what's his name? Freddy Krueger has a brief appearance in there. The first one's a great movie but it's a very good movie and a movie that deserves some acclaim. The next ones are just plain, let's keep this shit alive because we can. It's nostalgia.
So the funny thing about that is that actually brings me to Scary Movie, right? So Scary Movie was a spoof.
Scary Movie wouldn't exist if not Scream for Scream.
Right, but I think, like, to me, the Scary Movie, whatever, because they did as many Scary Movies as they did Screams. Yeah. I thought those were all hilarious. It's not on my list,
The first one is great.
I thought they were all fucking hilarious.
The third one is my favorite. The one with Charlie Sheen?
Yes.
I mean, they spoof fucking everything from 8 Mile to Signs to The Ring. And I'm with you on that. That's a Wayans Brothers movie. And those guys didn't hold back. I loved those movies. But the Scream movies, by the time they get to the third one, it's all the same shit. And again, they stayed with some star power. I mean, Courtney Cox and David Arquette and Campbell.
But how many Jason movies have there been?
A ton, but it's just that...
13?
I don't know. But But those were frankly all garbage.
They're all the same, but I mean, like, that's with horror movies and the horror movie genre. I mean, but any of these movies where
but those are just totally a keep it alive. So 2 and 3, I'll defend my fondness for Scream. I will defend my fondness for 2 and 3, and I'll simply say I'm nostalgic for the first movie, and this other one I will fully admit is just plain trash.
Well, that's fine. But the issue that we have is that my next one isn't one, it's a whole franchise.
All right.
And it probably wouldn't take you long to guess, but
I know it's gonna be Fast and Furious.
Yes.
Because your fondness for that is beyond reason. I'm sorry, my friend.
Any Fast and Furious movie from the first one, where we had curly hair Paul Walker and bald Jack Vin Diesel, all the way to Hobbs and Shaw, any one of them, even Tokyo Drift, right? The annoying thing about Tokyo Drift is that it's out of order, and it's not god awful. It's actually pretty good. The annoying thing about Tokyo Drift is that it's out of order, and when you were if you watch the movies in sequence as they were released, I didn't realize that it was out of order. I just thought there was a beef, there was a beef with Vin Diesel. He was doing Pitch Black and all this other shit that he was doing at the time. He didn't have time for it, so he couldn't do it. So they do this Tokyo Drift thing, and I was kind of pissed. But they ended up being a good movie, in my opinion. And he has a little cameo at the end. But then they wrap it back around in, like, Fast and the Furious, like, 6 or 7. And then it all of a sudden makes sense. I will defend, until my death, that is one of the best movie franchises out.
Okay, so I'm glad you said this, because I've held this in for years. There was one time we were going to go do something, and I want to say it was the opening night of Fast and the Furious 6. And I'm like, so what are you up to this weekend? I'm like, I'm going to see Fast and Furious 6 at the theater. Really? Okay. And then I talked to you about it afterwards, and you were stoked. And I was like, let me guess. They drove fast cars, had wild stunts, had hot chicks, and I didn't say anything. None of this conversation happened. This is in my head.
Yes.
I literally was like, you're spending your Friday night,
you're goddamn right,
dragging your wife to go see Fast and the Furious 6. And yeah, okay, but that, you know what, that's a textbook definition, because
any one of those movies comes on, stopped dead in my tracks every time. Holiday.
And talk about a cast, though, right? I mean, they brought in
God forbid Diesel, The Rock. God forbid I need to go somewhere.
God forbid your house is on fire, but the movie's on.
Well, let me just put it on a DVR. We'll get back to this.
But yes,
but, listen.
Definition.
Before Hobbs and Shaw, you had Jason Statham, The Rock, Vin Diesel. You know, unfortunately, Paul Walker passed away, which is really sad. But you got Tyrese, you got Ludacris, Gal Gadot. Who else? Other people that I'm leaving out that I can't think. The girl.
I don't watch these movies.
Damn it.
I've seen the first one, and
of all, you need to see them all.
I do not.
You do.
I don't.
You do.
Hey, Jim, Casablanca's on. No, I'm watching
Fast and Furious 7.
5, the Quickening. That was kind of a dick move on my part, but I'm kind of
proud of it. Fast and the Furious 10, upset rear differential. I don't know. I love the... And listen, like, I get it.
Fast and Furious 11, 5-minute oil change.
Loop stop. So, listen. I get it. Yes, they are dumb. They are very basic. They're driving fast. There's a heist. They're stealing things. There's fight scenes. The Rock and Vin Diesel are jacked. They brought in Idris Elba, who...
Idris Elba was in one?
Pause. He was in the last one, okay. Hobbs and Shaw. I share a birthday with Idris Elba.
Yes, you learned this the other day. You were very happy.
And... what I figured out, I did the math, by the transitive property, I am honorable mentions world's sexiest man circa 2017, because we share a birthday.
I was about to say, that's not the transitive arc. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You roll with that.
And you know I'm right. You share a birthday with Travis Scott.
And you don't I didn't even know who that is.
I do know Hiram Zayas. I did not know until 3 days ago. All right, my fifth one, and this actually kind of falls, other than the fact that there's no sequels yet, the recent movie, The A-Team. I love that movie.
Okay.
It is everything I just made fun of you for. It is in spades. Like, it is so...
The fucking audacity for you to make fun of me in The Fast and the Furious. Well, you said your next one is the fucking A-Team?
The A-Team. All right, I'm going to ask a question. Did you see it?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yes.
I knew you would. Of course. It was great. It was fun.
I am not hard to figure out.
For me...
Other than Steel Magnolias and Mean Girls, I am not hard to figure out.
Other than 40% of the movies you named today. All right, so the other day it was on again, and I'm like, fuck, here goes an hour and a half of my life. It's funny. There's a big nostalgic factor, too.
There is. I love A-Team as a kid. Red-blooded kid didn't.
And
you've got another good cast. You've got Bradley Cooper.
And what's his name?
Action Jackson.
What's his name? Rampage Jackson.
Yes.
Not Action Jackson. That's the movie with Carl Weathers.
Yes.
But Rampage Jackson's actually pretty good in that movie. Yeah. So cheesy.
His character's Rampage Jackson. Cheesy.
Yeah, it is. And the action is... And it's also got Jessica Alba, which is never a bad thing.
No.
No.
But it's cool. Cheesy, like, the whole thing about the A-Team. Like, and if you... Like, the A-Team of the show, like, if you think about what that plot was... Right, like the Special Forces team.
Soldiers of Fortune.
Yes.
You're lucky if you can find. All right, I'm gonna give you an admission similar to the Steel and Magnolias thing. The first time I saw that movie, and when they did the, if you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team. When that came on, I literally got a little teary. I'm like, fucking A, I'm now tearing up at the theme to the A-Team. This is weird at best.
Why are you crying? Why are we crying?
I remember this from my childhood.
Still crying in the A-Team.
I didn't cry. I was just like, got emotional. Like, oh my God, I remember this one. You know, the first time I saw this movie, they still survive. That was how the show used to start.
Yes.
And now that it ended, I'm like, oh fuck. So it made me feel like that movie probably came out. I'm sorry, that series came out.
Was it like 86?
Somewhere around there, maybe even 83 or 84, and it came up. The premiere of the A-Team was right after a Super Bowl, and Mr. T was in the audience at the Super Bowl. And I remember saying to my dad, you know, I bet Mr. T would be killing people out there. I was like, you know, there's a little more technique to this game than so. I was probably 12 or 13, so probably 83 or 84. But anyway, a little bit emotional, and I will never defend it as a good movie. The only reason there shouldn't be a sequel or won't be a sequel is if, they can't get those stars together again, because that's a tough bunch to tie down.
I don't know how you would... I don't think you can afford to do it, right?
Rampage Jackson should have a pretty open schedule when it comes to acting. But in general, getting Jessica Alba, Bradley Cooper, and Liam Neeson together again...
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
Yep. All right, there's my fifth.
So, this next one, actually, if you think about it, probably isn't that hard, if you spend any sort of amount of time with me. But it's also... another franchise, and any one of these in the franchise will stop me dead in my tracks. I mean, to a fault.
All right, so I nailed the first one.
Yes.
I'm not even going to take a swing. Go ahead.
Just.
You want to give it? All right. Franchise that would.
I really like, and I'll tell you, it's not Star Wars, and it has nothing to do with Marvel.
Oh, okay. I was about to, Marvel's not a guilty pleasure. No. People fucking love Marvel, and no one will ever criticize you for that. Same with Star Wars, even though they probably should. I'm drawing a blank. Go ahead.
John Wick.
Oh, geez, how did I fuck that up? But all right. Okay, so, how did I fuck that up? Because how many times have you and I got dragged? Like,
fucking John arguments Wick 3 over
is the greatest movie ever. Like, you know, there's The Godfather.
Okay. It's the greatest movie ever.
And there's that scene... Okay, no, it's on now.
Listen, we can... If you want to argue about the technicalities...
I do.
...of it, okay, fine. Right? I mean, because there's some things... I mean, like, there's some things that you have to accept going into this movie. Like, it's not completely based in reality. Right? Period. That being said, to me... John, like Keanu Reeves as John Wick is, like, it's a generational character if you watch the movie for what it is. Again, not expecting to win Academy Awards. You're not going in thinking that it's going to be better than The Godfather. You're going in for action. And, like, there's not even... Like, John Wick doesn't even have a ton of, like, gratuitous sex or anything like that, right? Like, there's a couple of moderately attractive women sprinkled throughout. Like, they've got Halle Berry in 3.
And yeah, she's moderately attractive.
Like, she's very... I mean, like, Halle Berry is hot, fucking but, like...
gorgeous, yeah.
There's no, like... I mean,
but
there's
they don't, it's not all, like...
There's no sex scenes.
Fast and Furious is sex, speed, and, right? and drinking.
And there's not even a ton of sex in Fast and Furious.
And Beer Fest is... Tits and just drinking tits and stupidity, yeah.
But, I mean, like, John Wick is just... I mean, the story is... Like, this dude is a one-man killing show, and he is the very best at it, and he's got this sense of honor, but at the same time, he is one of the worst humans on the planet. Right. And it's a good story, and there's a reason why it's had the success that it's had. There's a reason why there's a third, and that they're gonna make a fourth. They have to make a fourth. I will be disgusted if they don't.
You know, it's funny because I watched, I want to say it was the second one, and I was talking to you about it, and we were talking about the scene where he's fighting with Common, and, like, I forget which one had the gun in their hand, but it was a really well choreographed fight scene. Great scene. I mean, they're literally, like, grappling and positioning, and I remember talking to you, like, and then there's the whole gun being involved, and you were like, well, yeah, that does play a role in the fight. But then later in that movie, they're walking through a train station, like sneakily shooting silenced handguns, like, stop it, shoot!
Okay.
Please!
So, this is something...
Like,
so
everyone around them is getting clamped and their stuff blown. I'm like, aim the fucking gun! I'm like, look, it's under my shoulder. You can't see, huh? Got you, buddy. Got you. Tricked you. Ooh, look at this. Behind the back this time. Off the train station, over the way, and a rebound. Oh, just missed you.
Yes. So, that's probably... that. There's that. But it's still, I believe, wildly entertaining... I think that movie did something for gun culture that if you're anti-gun, you're not thrilled about. If you're pro-gun, you love. And then if you're just kind of sounding like gun curious, I guess, is interesting, right? Because they do, like, I think they do take the time and effort to be realistic with how the guns use, how they operate, you right. know, like, okay. the, you know.
I mean, you know, bad gunplay in movies drives me nuts.
So me as well.
I was watching Dirty Harry the other day, and there's a scene, the very first scene, right, where you're right. like, I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, the fact is, he hadn't cocked the gun yet, so right. he would actually be able to tell.
Right.
And like, again, does it ruin the movie? No. But is it bad?
Are you a nitpicky bastard?
Yes, I am. But fucking A, Clint, get it right.
Right. I mean, and... The John Wick movies are artfully done. And again, if you're just going in because you want to enjoy the movie, you're okay with gratuitous violence, you're fine with Keanu Reeves's, like, kind of awkward, muted delivery, then they're fun movies, and you're rooting for them in the end, and it's enjoyable, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's fucking entertainment. And the third one is relatively intense. You know, I mean, there's some additional twists and turns, and I'm excited for the fourth one.
You know, again, guilty pleasures. Yes, people could make fun of you for that, but a lot of people say those are a great franchise. So I won't. I have personally made fun of you for this, but I get it, and I have not seen enough of them to really.
Which I think is bullshit, by the way.
But I haven't. You're mad because I'm not able to enjoy one of your favorite series. When it comes to bad gunplay, you just put a thought in my head. I love the movie 48 Hours. Another 48 Hours is garbage.
Yeah.
But in the first 48
Hours... The first 48 Hours is really...
All-time classic. It launched a genre of buddy cop movies. Or not exactly, because Eddie Murphy wasn't a cop. But talk about bad gunplay. In the first one, early scene, right, there's a shootout in the hotel lobby. James Remar, Albert Gans, the bad guy, makes Nick Nolte throw him his gun in an attempt to spare Jonathan Banks. Think about that. Jonathan Banks, who ends up being in Breaking Bad and all that. So James Remar, the father in Dexter and a bunch of other things along the way, gets Nick Nolte's gun, which is a .44 caliber revolver, which holds 6 rounds. He then proceeds to fire 8 consecutive shots. Bam, 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 bam. And I'm like, you didn't need that. You didn't need that. I watched the movie the first time at like 16, and I'm like, dude! Bam, 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 bam. I'm like, you got 6. You fired 8.
Okay.
All right, sorry. It's me being a nitpicky bastard again, but fuck! Do it right. All right.
So what's on your honorable mention list?
First of all, I got to tell you something about an experience we had about a week ago. You came into my house, and the TV was on, and I don't remember what I was watching before you got here, but I had left the TV on.
Oh, that's right.
And I think it's called Killing Hasselhoff, and it's an incredibly cheesy movie.
Yes.
It's about a bar owner who tries to kill David Hasselhoff. And I walk in, and you're like, dude, you literally have to watch this. And you rewind a scene, and it's a scene where a guy is hiring this trained killer who's a badass black guy. And this is when you said the Terry Crews thing, it reminded me.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the end of the movie, you did not.
No.
All right, so the scene you described
funny to me. Funny that you watched the whole thing, though.
Well, no, I watched the end. Ricky Gervais is in it, by the way.
Weird.
Yeah, but anyway, so the way the movie ends is, first of all, the scene you were laughing at is this hired killer who's a complete, you know, hard ass, is gay. And the guy says, you're gay? He's like, look, I'm a bad motherfucker. I kill people for a living. Inside, I'm gay as fuck. And you were just laughing your ass off of this. Well
so, part of the issue is, I walk in your house, you're not here. Right, and I'm trying to like kind of get my bearings in terms of what the hell is going on, and then all I hear about is this guy saying, you know,
I'm a hard ass motherfucker,
right? Like, you know, like can't judge a book by its cover. I, you know, like the outside, I'm this, you know, hard murdering black son of a bitch, but in the inside, I'm soft and gay as shit. I'm like, Jim, what the fuck are you watching?
Right. So, at the end of the movie, this guy is about to kill David Hasselhoff. He has an extremely awkward...
The black dude?
Yeah. He's got a gun. He's got David Hasselhoff. Makes him turn around so he can shoot him in the back of the head. But he's extremely enamored with David Hasselhoff. And he basically starts... And those arms, you're Hasselhoff. And it just gets really awkward, really weird. And basically says, you got two choices, Hasselhoff. Either you can fuck me or I'm going to kill you. He's like, is there any in between? He gets distracted. He gets distracted by other people coming in. While he's distracted, David Hasselhoff grabs a samurai sword off his wall. The guy fires the gun at David Hasselhoff, who smacks the bullet with the samurai sword and hits him in the balls, or in the dick, with the bullet from his own gun. Like, you just did that shit. That was like Iron Man fucks Spider-Man with the Hulk's dick. How can I kill this? It was so bad.
Okay.
All right. I had been meaning to tell you that for weeks. I tried to find it so I could record it for you, and I couldn't find it.
Oh.
And so now...
Thank you.
It was so dumb.
I appreciate it.
You know, I looked for this, and if you can, you must find this. The end of Killing Hasselhoff is maybe the dumbest thing in movie history ever, and fucking great.
That was just something odd to walk into.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it was also odd for me, for you, like, hey, you gotta watch this. Like, well, what?
It was on your fucking TV.
It was on my TV. I was watching, I think it was Citizen Kane was on before that. And I was watching Citizen Kane, and
one extreme to another.
It was not, I don't know what I go with them. Trying to those. So on my honorable mention list.
So is Killing Hasselhoff on your honorable mention
You know what? I have not seen it. It may be at the top of my list if I ever see it again. Because truthfully, if it came on again, I would watch it.
I do have a number of questions about that movie, so I may need to actually watch it myself.
Wait to set the table for an excuse. What are you watching? It's for research.
First of all, I have no shame with my bad movie choices. All
right.
I never have.
All right. So on my honorable mention, I had trouble with a few. I love the movie The Losers. Idris Elba's in that as well. Chris Evans, who played the comedian in Watchmen? Oh,
I just know him as Denny from the hospital.
It's a three Dean something.
Yeah.
Anyway, cheesy action flick.
What's it about?
It's four special forces guys who end up. Oh, and Jason Patrick too. You've never seen The Losers?
I've never seen it. What's it about?
It's again, cheesy movie. It's these guys who are, you know, special forces guys. They get set up and they're supposed to get burned by the dark state or whatever. And the dark state thinks they've killed them, and then they come back and plot revenge. And it's cheesy action, some gratuitous sex that isn't even that intensely sexual, because It's I think it's PG-13, so like.
You don't have to break down the sex scene.
Anyway, there's the favorite scene in that movie is Chris Evans is the tech nerd, and he breaks into the.
Like Captain America, Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Huh.
And so
it's weird that I feel like I've not heard of it.
Best scene, again, spoiler alert. He has to break into this computer system in this huge corporation to decode a hard drive, and he gets chased. You know, he does the thing, but he's getting chased by security, and they pull guns on him, and he goes, "All right, guys, the government made me a lethal killing machine. I have they did weird stuff to me, spooky stuff, anal stuff, gave me the ability to kill people with my mind. So, as the ancient philosophy says, don't start none, won't be none." And the guys with guns on them go, "Get telekinetic your way out of this." And then he goes, "Poof," and the guy just drops dead from a bullet shot. He goes, "Poof," and the second guy drops dead from a bullet shot. He goes to the third guy and goes, "Face down, or I'll kill you with my mind, make your heart explode with my mind." And the guy lays down, and he just watches two buddies get shot with just like fingers. And then he gives the okay sign, and he had a sniper behind him who had shot two holes. There's a sniper as one of their characters, who had shot two holes through the window from a building across the street. Mm-hmm. Just really cool scene. And
so there's a scene similar to that in Fast and the Furious 7.
They copied it off the losers.
I don't believe so.
Either way, cool fucking scene, right?
Fast and Furious is better.
You don't know because that. You've never seen The Losers.
It was Vin Diesel talking to the German dude and The Rock. They were in Paris, of all places, and better scene.
You make a strong case because it's got Vin Diesel
and The Rock.
And a McLaren. Cheesy as fuck, but it's, I wish I could come up with that dude's name. But that's another movie that embarrassingly silly, but I love it.
So The Losers.
Yep.
I'll put it on my list of movies I will find. It sounds like it's up my alley.
Actually, you will. I'm not going to say any more about it because I don't want to ruin it. There's so many just ridiculously dumb things in it. In fact, I've talked about this movie in the past because I've told you about one scene. And you looked at me like I had three heads.
It's hard if I haven't seen it. Then. So, one that I couldn't put on the list, only because it's just too popular. But it's a movie that I love. And it's not even a guilty pleasure because they were both really good. Is Deadpool. Deadpool and Deadpool 2. Now,
yeah, that's just a pleasure. Those are both
great. Ryan Reynolds is amazing. And
I think it's the highest grossing.
Second, because the Joker just beat it out. Okay. And Ryan Reynolds gave Joaquin Phoenix a bunch of shit about it on social media, which is pretty funny. I mean, obviously the movie's critically acclaimed, but I was a Deadpool fan in the comics, right?
Right.
The character was notorious for breaking the fourth wall, and it was in the fourth wall being, the comic book character was aware that he was a comic book character and would let the reader know. You're
talking to the reader, right?
Right, and it's kind of weird, right? Like, because you've got 20 years of reading comic books of them not acknowledging that they're comic book characters, and then all of a sudden you've got this Deadpool guy who does. So when there have been talks about making it a movie for years, they finally kind of do with the Wolverine movie, but they completely fucked it all up. And so then it was just like,
was that Logan or?
No, it was Wolverine. The origin story.
Okay.
Yeah. The first origin story with Wolverine. And so and they had Ryan Reynolds. He was like, that character technically was, Agent X or whatever was technically Deadpool, but they they bastardized it to a point where it made no sense, right? So then they come back, they make the Deadpool movies, right? And then the second one, he goes back at the end of the credits and he goes and he shoots him and he's just like, "Sorry about that, don't even worry about it," just cleaning up the timeline. But that movie, again, that's another movie that I will stop and watch at any point in time, although it's hard to call it a guilty pleasure because of the level of success.
And they are great. I loved the first one. We've bar argued about the second one, And again, you yell at me for, inserting logic, just leave it the fuck alone and enjoy it. But they're both hilarious. I love TJ Miller in those movies.
Yes.
I would go with you, but I don't want to. great movies. And shameless referencings of themselves, right? He tells the old lady, hey, by the way, I hid the cure for blindness in the floor along with a kilo of cocaine. In the second movie, there's a hole in the floor with a box that says the cure for blindness. yeah, great. All right, I'm going to do one that would, honest to God, make people mad at me.
Okay.
I love the movie Tombstone. Lots of people love the movie Tombstone.
Right.
If you break it down, the movie's cheesy as fuck. Okay. It is just cheesy. I mean, I'm an Old West buff. I like, you know, the realism stuff. And the whole, oh my God, just so cheesy. Again, I love it. I watch that movie every time it's on.
Well, but I guess,
if you want reality, it's nowhere near it.
Okay. I mean, fine.
People who base their opinion of who and what Wyatt Earp was and who and what Doc Holliday was and use that movie. You can't, but a lot of people do. That's why I didn't make my list because, again, I love the movie. If you're looking for reality, it ain't the one. If you're looking for entertainment, it's great.
I don't watch movies thinking that's not realistic. Like, there's no way I could enjoy The Fast and the Furious. Like, they defy physics in every movie, and it's getting worse as the movies go along. So at some point in time, you just have to let that go.
Understood.
And so, look, a movie like Tombstone was just, like, when that movie came out, I was, I don't know, 15, 14, somewhere between 13 and 15, right? It was early, mid-90s. You know, you've got Kurt Russell,
Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Val Kilmer. Oh, again, loaded cast.
And the movie's got great lines, Holliday's lines, Wyatt Earp's lines. Right,
I enjoy it. I enjoy it, but it was on my honorable mention list because, you know, Kevin Costner made a movie called Wyatt Earp like 2 years later.
That was awful.
I love that movie.
Maybe that's I'm sure it was movie, more historically accurate, it was. But it wasn't nearly as entertaining.
It was not nearly as entertaining. There's like an hour and a half that's just, it's great for about 30 minutes, and then there's an hour and a half of awful, and then it gets really good at the end. But not many people survive the hour and a half in the middle. We have a mutual share. This should be the ultimate definition of a guilty pleasure because this movie fits all the definitions of what we talked about, and we both love this movie. I'm going to see if you can guess what I'm saying. Amazing cast, lots of cheesy action, or a fair bit of cheesy action, crazy storyline. It contains, oh God, Ryan Reynolds is one of the characters. Yep.
I love that fucking movie.
I love that movie so much.
I saw it in the theater. About it. So here's the deal. So that movie came out. I was in law school still, and I was in Chicago, and I went with a friend of mine, and we took our, like, these two girls that lived next to us, right? They were our neighbors, and we were trying to bang them. So we have this good idea. Let's take them to a movie, then we'll go out to dinner and go get drinks. We didn't put a lot of thought into the movie. There wasn't much going. Smoking Aces was playing. So we go and we watch it. Me and my buddy love it. The girls hate it. Right? They hated it. Right? I mean, and the movie is kind of dumb.
Oh, it's cheesy.
Right? It's cheesy.
But there's twists and turns.
Right? And it's not even like funny. Ryan Reynolds has a couple like little side quips, but it's not his normal, you know, shit talking and all that other stuff. Right? Like, it's not his normal thing, but I mean, you've got Andy Garcia, you've got
Ray Liotta,
Taraji P. Henson, Common,
Alicia Keys.
Yes, what's his name from Entourage?
One of my favorite actors of all time.
I've drank with him and I can't remember his name right now. But Jeremy Piven,
thank you. Andy's the main character, by the way.
Right, like all these fucking characters. And this, like,
Jason Bateman,
right? Like, in the, like, there's so.
Oh, by the way, Ben Affleck,
right? What's his name? The new Captain Kirk,
Chris Pine,
right? Like, I mean, the movie's
and we're leaving about five or six out.
Yes, I mean Ray Liotta. I mean the movie's loaded, and the story's wild, but it's for whatever reason it's fun. There are a couple things I still do not understand, right? I mean, Jason Bateman dressed up as a fucking...
Okay. So, Jason Bateman is...
Like, I understand his character, but I still don't understand.
I don't even want to leave Pete Berg out of it, because I think he directed it. Right. He's in it, and he deserves a mention. But yeah, so Jason Bateman is kind of a snitch. He's a guy who got screwed over by Jeremy Piven's character. And then there's a scene where he is in his bed in a bra and panties. There's another scene with a bunny suit. Like, literally, I mean...
you just don't get a good explanation as to what's going on.
And I frankly don't want it.
Right. And then you've got the dude who's lost his fingers with the woman and the kid.
So,
right? Yeah, and the dildo and the bathtub.
So let me paint that, because I had watched Smokin' Aces probably 10 times. So basically, one of those characters ends up getting shot up by Chris Pine and his crew, ends up falling into Lake Tahoe. Nearly freezes to death. He gets rescued. He knocks on this woman's door. She rescues him. She's pouring like a hot bath. In a trailer park. Pouring a hot bath on him to save him from hypothermia. There's this little kid with an eye patch who's threatening him with nunchucks and talking shit. And the woman who saved him...
You eyeballing me, boy?
The woman that saves him literally reaches over the bathtub and grabs a large dildo and just like, oh, sorry about this. And I had watched that movie 10 times where I recognized that. I'm like, oh, fuck, I can't believe I missed that.
What? Oh, my God.
That's... Maybe not 10, but 5. I was like, that is so hilarious.
It's a weird... Like, the movie is... The plot line is weird, but it's
actually tough to follow. It's right, very intricate.
Right,
very
intricate. It is intricate. It is tough to follow, but it ends dark, too. It ends very dark.
Other than Common and Alicia Keys falling in love.
Right, like, it's just like, okay, that's kind of weird.
And there's some great, like, you know, Mexican standoff scenes where it's like, okay, we can do this or not. But the end of the movie is like incredibly dark.
And the one dude who had the thing.
That wasn't Soot. That was, yeah. Yeah.
Right, and it's just like, because was he dead or was he alive?
I think at the end of the movie he's alive. And what does he do next?
I don't know.
Here's the funny thing. There is a Smokin' Aces 2.
No, there's not.
Yes, there absolutely is. 100%. There was a second Smokin' Aces movie. I don't know anything about it. I don't know that it ever saw a theater.
Oh, man. We might have
to. You know what? This sounds like a...
We're going to have to tap into those brownies.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Hop on the old Netflix and see where this goes.
You know what? That would not be a bad way. Okay, that would be a terrible way. But there is a Smokin' Aces 2.
Interesting.
And
fun movie.
It is. All right, I had a few others on my list that, again, I couldn't do it because, in my opinion, I can defend every ounce of it.
Well, so I have another one. And this is, for whatever reason, so far our list of honorable mentions are very Ryan Reynolds heavy. But one of my favorite movies that I love to watch is Waiting.
Is that the Ryan Reynolds...
It's Ryan Reynolds and the dark-haired kid. I can't think of the kid's name.
I've seen that. It's great.
They're basically working at like a TGI Fridays.
Right.
But it talks about like basically working the service industry.
Right.
And the movie is like Ryan Reynolds, one, is hilarious in it. Oh, what is that kid's name? John?
You go ahead. I'll
John something. It's not John Cryer, because that's...
No, definitely not John Cryer.
But anyway, it's just a movie about working in the service industry. Now, I've worked in the service industry, right? College, law school.
I have too.
Even lately, you know what I mean? Like, even done bar security or whatever. Yeah. And it's a vicious cycle, especially if that's all you're doing, right? Like, you know, you work late, you serve, like, you start working at 5, 6 o'clock at night. You don't get off until midnight, till in the morning. You go find a place to party after the bar or the restaurant closes. You know, like, you drink, do whatever. You're trying to hook up with somebody, the whole thing.
John Francis Daly.
As a golfer. And
according to IMDb, it is.
No way.
Francis Daly.
Show me a picture.
Riveting podcast. Yeah, exactly. Also, Anna Faris, by the way.
Yes, Anna Faris.
I mean, he's the number two build on IMDb.
No, not John Francis Daly. I knew it wasn't him.
This is phone scrolling going on. Sorry, this is not the best entertainment. But, other than the point of the show is, if we were at a bar, we'd be scrolling through each other's phones trying to name this guy.
But
I would say it's a really good movie. I mean, it's funny. It has an element that, you know, appeals to you more if you work in the service industry.
Because right. If either you work there or have worked there or know someone who's worked in it and you've seen the cycle. And there's
at the time I was dating a waitress and she was like, you gotta watch this movie with me. Now, I was a short order cook in right after college. I
worked Long.
Justin Long. It's like, okay, yes.
But yeah, so it's just, I guess to a degree, it's a little bit of a referendum, right? And one of the things in there is that Justin Long's character is, you know, he's working at a restaurant, he's a waiter, he's not a complete degenerate, he needs to go to school, you know, he's trying to figure out his life, you know, am I going to be a waiter for the rest of my life, or am I going to go to college? And, you know, kind of teetering on the back and forth, and in the service industry, you see that all the time. You know, your waiter, your bartender, or whatever, I was in school, and I took a semester right. off, and or they've been doing it for so long, it's just like, yeah, it becomes their career, and it's just like, yeah, I'm going to be your manager, I'm going to take over when the owner retires, whatever it might be. So on the one part, it was kind of like, oh, shit, this is my life. And then on the other part, it's fucking hilarious.
Right.
Oh my God, the Mexican dude.
The Mexican
No, the short Mexican dude who's like he's
yeah, in the movies I don't know his name though.
Oh my God, I can't think of his name, but he rubbed the French toast in his ass. Oh.
You know, I'll let you finish on waiting.
Anyway, waiting.
You just reminded me of a movie that I have learned to love that almost no one saw. Again, amazing cast. Have you seen Funny People? Mm-mm. It's got it's got your boy RZA in it.
Yes, I have, because he's, what's his name?
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen.
And Adam Sandler.
Your twin.
So, nothing like Seth Rogen, by the way. Apparently, according to Steve's friends, I sound like Seth Rogen. Or they pictured me as Seth Rogen.
But he was drunk. He's apologized for that a million times.
It's all good. All good.
Not directly to you, but...
Yeah, or never to me. But, in fact, he introduces himself to me saying, I thought you would look like Seth Rogen, and I just like, okay, good to meet you. But anyway, that movie is really impressive because
they laughed about it.
Yeah, it was not a very well received apology. Actually, it's a really interesting movie though. So in the movie, Seth Rogen is a wannabe comic.
Yes,
I know something about being a wannabe comic, and watching him try to develop material and just suck and then get better. And Adam Sandler is a well established comedian who became a comedic actor who made movies he hates. And it finds out he's got a disease and he's probably going to die. And there's a bunch of side plots. And ultimately he tries to reunite with the woman that he cheated on and lost. And then she's married now and that becomes a situation. So there's a whole bunch of actual quality storylines, some decent comedy. And I'm going to get a bit weird here, but I watched that movie. And then a couple of years later, I started doing stand-up. And when you're around comics... And you see, like, Aziz Ansari in that movie comes off stage and he's like, that's how you get that shit done, son. And he's dancing and doing whatever. And in the movie, he does a bit that I've seen him do in stand-up. So it's funny. It's just watching people struggle to become comics and then, you know, get shit on by the people who've made it or you know, get you're a nobody and then, you know, you're surrounded by Adam Sandler who's... I'm derailing here, but
no. Really interesting. I get what you're saying.
It hit me different personally after I watched it again after starting doing stand-up.
So you watch the movie. So obviously you wanted to be a comic before you saw the movie. So
I never tried. Never thought about it before that.
Oh, so you I saw the movie and said, I can do this?
No. I watched the movie and said, it's a good movie. And then I started doing stand-up comedy, and I watched the movie again. And it made my appreciation for, you know, here's Seth Rogen's character. He's sleeping on his friend's couch. And obviously, that's not me. I started doing comedy when I was 43 years old with an established career.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
And a little bit off topic. So why did you start doing comedy?
Oh, that can get a bit, okay. there's a couple answers to that. One of my interns, when I worked for Burt's Bees, now I was 31 at the time, and she was a 22-year-old intern, thought I was hilarious. And she used to say, you should do stand-up comedy. And I told her, I can't. Like, yeah, I say funny shit in the meetings at work, great. Whole different thing trying to do stand-up. But I've been a fan of that art form for a long time, literally since my teens. I mean, Andrew Dice Clay and Eddie Murphy and Sam Kinison were, excuse me, you know, just amazed me. Like, wow, this guy's walking around the stage and telling jokes that are really inappropriate. And people are going nuts. So I always loved the art form of stand-up comedy. So anyway, Jesse, you've actually spoken to Jesse.
I have.
She told me if I ever would actually do stand-up, she would come see me. She stiffed. But I always told myself, I owe it to myself as a fan of this art form to at least one time be on the working side of the microphone and see what it's like. My ex-girlfriend and I went to a show at Barrio, hosted by Bill Squire, who's been on the show. And he, you know, she introduced me to him. And he said, hey, if you want to do a show, email me. It's booking@billsquire.com. You know, we'll take first-timers. And he booked me for a show at Barrio in Lakewood, Ohio. And I actually did an open mic right before that. But that was the first time I was ever booked. I went up, and I felt great coming off stage. I watched the replay of that 2 years later. I'm like, my God, you sucked. Holy shit. Thank God your delusional gene was working that day, and you didn't realize how bad you were. But the rush of... So I did it for the first time because I love the medium and because Jess said she was going to come see me. And then I got up the nerve to do it, and it became... I mean, for a while, I think I could safely call it an addiction. I'm still doing it. I don't do it with nearly as much, regularity. Yeah. You know, here's the funny thing. The Cleveland comedy scene is really fantastic. I mean, a couple folks have moved on.
Introduced me to people, and you know, once I started paying attention, following them, they're legit funny. And again, spending time with you in the comedy scene
community, right?
You know, whatever. A lot of really talented comics that are, you know, that seem like they're on the verge of getting there, which is kind of the thing with comedy, right?
Right. Cleveland's a launching pad.
Yeah.
So Yusuf Ali has a poster in this room. In our studio. Yusuf is now out in L.A. He's doing real well with comedy. He was really cool to me when I was early in the game. And that's why when he made his poster, I gave him a donation as he was on his way out to L.A. And that's why the poster, I have an autographed poster in this room. So if that ever becomes worth something, I'll split it with you.
Thanks.
But, I mean, Ramon Rivas has gone off to L.A. Jasmine Carter's gone off to L.A. You know, and I could keep naming names. I wish I hadn't named names.
And Mike Polk didn't go anywhere. He's still here and is a pretty well-known name in comedy.
He's a very locally well-known comic. He's got a new show on Channel 3, which means nothing to anyone outside of Cleveland. I want to close the show then. Is there anything else you want to say? I'm going to do a comedy throwout, and then we'll call it a day.
Well, so there's one more movie.
Okay.
One more movie, and the reason I kind of went to the comedy thing is because of who's in this movie, but I love Half-Baked.
That was on my list, too.
And I'm not...
That was on my honorable mention list, too.
I'm not pothead guy. I partake whatever.
On occasion, for sure.
But I just... First of all, I love Dave Chappelle, right? Chappelle's show, his stand-up, old, new... Like, I love Dave Chappelle, and that movie is hilarious for so many reasons. One, Dave Chappelle being Dave Chappelle.
Two,
get off me, bitch, I'm impotent.
Dave Chappelle beats or smokes a lot.
Right, I mean, you know, all the different, you know, the characters that he plays, the people that are in the movie, Snoop Dogg, Willie Nelson,
Brennan.
What's his name, goat guy?
Jim Brewer.
Jim Brewer.
Sorry, I meant Jim Brewer, not Neil Brennan. Jim Brewer.
And then, oh my God, the girl, Mary Jane.
Yes.
She was, I still think she's hot. I actually follow her on Instagram. But, like, she, you know, she was on that, she was in the, what was that movie, The Craft?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The that witch was, movie, it was, right? Craft. It was like her, Neve Campbell, and somebody else. But
Faziana Balk.
What'd you just call her?
Faziana Balk.
Oh, her name was Fuzzy. Oh, okay.
What do you think I said?
I didn't know. Like, Fuzzy on the Balk?
I didn't call you for a balk. You didn't start towards the plate.
Just like, I'm not pitching.
Fuzzy on
and
the Balk.
I'm not fuzzy.
From The Waterboy.
I'm a little fuzzy.
You're a little fuzzy. And American History X, which was actually kind of on my guilty pleasure list, too.
No, that's
a great movie.
Too hard to watch.
It's brutal.
That's not one that I will stop and watch in my tracks.
There are scenes I cannot watch, but there are scenes I can't avoid. Scene. I cannot watch can't that. Watch it. I can't watch that. I can't watch the prison rape.
I can watch prison rape. I have
fuck you. A guy with a swastika tattooed to a chest. Let him take it in the ass.
Yeah, I just.
But there's so many great scenes in it too. My favorite scene in that movie. There's two scenes I love in that movie. When he's in the laundry for the first time with the black guy that becomes his friend. I don't even know what the actor's name is. And they're like, look, slow down. You're giving yourself a heart attack, which I don't care about. You're giving me a heart attack. And they end up like working together and like, okay, whatever. And they, form a friendship. And when the Aryan nation turns on Ed Norton or he turns on them, that guy essentially saves Ed Norton's life, but denies that he did it. And when Avery Brooks, as you know, I love Avery Brooks as an actor, when he gives Ed Norton the speech, like, you killed two people or three people. Did that make your life any better? And he just, there's so many powerful scenes in that movie.
I mean, there's a lot of powerful scenes in that movie.
Sorry for you. Well, that's a good turn, huh?
Well, no. And do you know my connection to that movie?
American History X?
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
So, here, weird, random story, but... So
if anyone is still listening to us at this point,
right,
they're going to appreciate that, so good.
So, my freshman year of high school, I went to a different school than Ursuline, where I graduated from, which Ursuline UHS, proud of,
right.
Green and gold, up in the sky, Great Big Thunder. But my first year, I went to a different high school, ran into some issues at that school.
I do know this.
Much of it racially motivated. A friend and I were really put in a precarious situation. He was Puerto Rican. I was black. I won't go...
Still are.
Right. Won't go into details, but there's a really rough year. Spray-painted lockers with epithets on them. The whole thing, like the shit that would be in an ABC after-school special. The school year ends... with me, him, and his little brother literally being jumped by roughly 100 students. His dad drove through a mob of people. We jumped in a Beretta, which is tough because it's a two-seater small car. He drove off, and then he and I was actually expelled. He and I were both expelled from school for what they said inciting a riot. But we were two freshmen, and they didn't like the fact that he, a Puerto Rican kid, dated a white girl, and they didn't like the fact that I was this big black dude that came in and was a, varsity level player on their football team. So all this shit goes on. We fight with the school district because, we were expelled, and being expelled means you can't fucking go to school in your county, right? Like, so we would have had to, and back then, they didn't have open enrollment, so literally our families would have had to have moved to another county so we can go to school. So we fought it. Eventually, we win. Ursuline accepted me, but they put all these sort of stipulations on me that were not unreasonable because I wasn't a bad kid, but the previous school that I went to basically lied to Ursuline and told them all these things that were not true or accurate or whatever. So Ursuline's like, we'll accept you. And they basically took me as sort of a rehabilitation project.
Sure. Right?
Fast forward, we continued, my friend and I wrote letters. His mother was a huge advocate of ours. We wrote to anyone in any office that you could think of. Local politicians, state politicians, federal politicians, Congress, state, Senate, local, federal, state, whatever. We wrote to the Rainbow Push Coalition. We wrote to Al Sharpton. We wrote to any superstar that said anything about racial injustice. And it all culminates with a phone call to my house on the north side of Youngstown from the White House. White House calls and said, we're inviting you to the National Hate Crime Summit. We want you to meet the president at the time, who was Bill Clinton, and, share with us your experience and let us know what we can do to make things better. I get the phone call. I answered the phone, thought it was a joke, hung up on the White House. My phone immediately rings again, and it's the White House. And they said, understand, but this is real. Can you make it out on such and such date? And your friend so-and-so is invited. He already accepted, so we would love to have you. Everything is on us. So I end up going to Washington, D.C. for the National Hate Crime Summit when I'm a sophomore in high school. Met Bill Clinton, met Bill and Hillary Clinton, Ted Kennedy. The story that American History X is based on was also there. He had...
Oh, okay.
He gave, like, a presentation, and then my buddy and I...
So we Derek Vineyard from... Yes. That, okay.
We met him, and he talked to us for... And he's... Looks nothing like Ed Norton Jr., but just kind of typical average white guy. He had kind of like a crew cut and these kind of black horn-rimmed glasses and was, I don't know, kind of just average white guy, right?
Okay.
That's my connection to that movie.
And Ed Norton in that movie is a badass, right? I mean, he's fucking jacked and he... Not to...
a solid 205.
Oh, yeah. You know what, funny thing? He was on Rogan's podcast like a couple weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago. And he walks around now at 155.
Yeah, he's a tiny human.
He's a skinny, tiny guy.
Yeah.
But in that one scene where he's like, you know, after he shoots and curb stomps the guy, he's like, you know, jacked up and just like, okay, this dude's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, would he scare you one-on-one in a room alone? No, maybe not. But in that scene, he looks like a vicious, powerful, evil...
Considering all the things that just happened leading up to that scene. So
and then there's that.
If you've never seen American History X, I highly
recommend it.
It's hard for me to actually recommend because it is very hard to watch, but it's something that needs to be seen.
It's a very smart movie.
Now, do you know there's an alternate ending to that movie where he, like, so the end of the movie, he's, you know, he's looking in the mirror.
Is there a spoiler alert? Because he's recommended it, so stop listening now. Go ahead.
Okay, well, not necessarily a spoiler, but he's looking in the mirror trying to figure out, like, what is the next step, right? After all the things that have happened. But there's an alternate ending to that movie where it infers that he turned back.
Okay.
I saw a rough edit of it, and it was really rough, so it didn't quite vibe. But it would be interesting the movie ends, I think, that gets us to the actual Derek Vineyard.
The reformation of Derek Vineyard, right. Yes.
But I think it would have been interesting if they may have taken some artistic art liberty and said, maybe you can't
reform someone like that?
Yeah.
You know, I think the whole point of the movie tried to be that there's good people on, you know, the gangbangers he kills in the beginning, not good people. His little brother was kind of a scumbag. The people who drove his little brother towards his path while he was in prison, fucking revolting.
Yes.
But then he, like I said, Avery Brooks gives that powerful speech about, did any of what you've done make you feel better, or however he said it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's just got prison raped.
Right. Prison rape will do that.
Yeah, change your emotions. All right, I wanted to do a little close out and tribute.
Okay.
But we did definitely change the vibe.
Yeah, we did diverge.
I was going to try to throw in a comic movie. Oh, did we already talk about the other guys? No, we didn't. All right, let's go back to that, because that's a movie you and I both love.
Yes.
I will not call it a guilty pleasure, because if you can't enjoy this movie, that's on you. Again, like, Monster Cast.
Right.
And you and I watched a part of it together a couple weeks ago.
And I just, first of all, the first... 10 minutes with, not even 10 minutes, the first 5 minutes with The Rock and Samuel Jackson are fucking hilarious.
There goes my hero. I'm gonna do.
And then you've got Michael Keaton in this movie who is unbelievable. It's a movie that if you haven't seen,
if you've not
see
seen
it,
the other guys,
Will Ferrell.
I talked to a really good friend a couple months ago, 4 months ago now, and he hates Will Ferrell.
Fair.
And he said, you know, Will Ferrell isn't funny. And I was like, look, watch this movie. And I described a few scenes. I described the scene where Will Ferrell gets convinced of taking an office pop where he fires his gun in a police station, has his gun taken away from him, and handed a wooden gun. And it gets funnier from there. The scene with... All right. You know what?
I'm not going to go through the scenes.
Yeah, I'm not going to go through it. But... I'm a peacock captain. You have to let me fly. A regular line from Mark Wahlberg, which is hilarious every time he gets responded to.
Peacocks don't fly.
They fly like... Yeah. Like an
anyway.
All right. So, Now we're back into comedy. I'm going to close this out.
Yeah.
I want to say thanks to Bill Squire. You brought up my comedy career. Bill Squire has been on the show. He was actually part of the launch of this show. I consider him a good friend. He's a very, and he's maybe, in my opinion, Bill Squire is the most influential person in the Cleveland comedy scene. He has helped so many people get stage time. He's encouraged people. I know people that were. To me, I mean, I'm not a serious comic. I do it for fun. I wish I worked harder at it. But I have so many people, so many friends in this community who work their asses off at it and are really making names for themselves. And a lot of them would not have had the chance to get the experience without Bill. And as an athlete, you know, repetition is everything.
Yeah.
You can't do something once in a blue moon and get better at it. You want to be a better comic, you got to work at it. And Bill has provided so many venues for people to do that. And I appreciate him very much. And
sounds like we need to have Bill back on the show.
We do need to have Bill back on the show. And I will bring it up to him. I'll reach out to him. He's, again, a good guy, a good friend. You ready?
Yeah.
We're out. Thanks for listening to a non-political episode of Whiskey Congress. We're out.